Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. Therefore, I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. In each episode, we'll walk through my expanders, a term in my manifestation formula signaling the people that already embody, have, or are successful in what we are looking to call in. These are the people that we witness through our mirror neurons on a subconscious level that expand us into knowing that our manifestations are possible as well. Especially when we hear about their background, their upbringing, their trials and tribulations, and any of their pitfalls that they had to experience along the way. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us our review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifester that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. So today's block that I want to cover is more of how to create magnetism. It's so simple. It's so important. Fear. Let's talk about fear. Everybody has it. It's the thing holding us all back from what we want and taking the next step to what we want. But the craziest news of all is your magnetism, your manifestation lies right behind your fear. So the craziest thing in manifestation energetics, when the old New Age think positive rhetoric model that I think failed most of us who were tuning into this, when they said think positive, visualize, just feel as if you already have the thing and it's coming to you, which I don't know about you, never really worked continuously for me. It had very little results for me. What's actually creating that pull is when we step into our true authenticity. And when we're born, we are purely authentic, we're totally whole, we're totally worthy, and then society builds up all this huge onion around us through pain, shame, labels, boxes that we receive through modeling and peers and media and you name it. And so that big onion, because we've experienced pain, we're really afraid to do a lot of things. And of course, the more we peel that onion and we start to just get back to our true authenticness, that's when we start to experience what's called magnetism. And while we're doing all this unblocking work through the workshops, through Reparent and Shadow, it's really important to remember if you're in a moment where you need to create magnetism right now. You know, you're not feeling a flow of anything, you're feeling like you're stagnant in your practice, even though you're doing work. Find some of your fears, even the smallest ones, and step right through them. And on the other side, you have some situational magnetism. It's without fail. So rather than we need to reframe the thing positive, because that doesn't actually get us too far at all in manifestation. And we need to actually start leaning into, wow, I'm really afraid to jump off of this cliff, or I'm really afraid to show up more as myself in something. I'm really afraid to leave this thing that isn't serving me, even if it's something really small. I'm really afraid to declutter all of this stuff in my place, my auric field, on the physical level, literally in my house, that I don't use anymore. But I'm afraid, what if I ever need it one day? Or, you know, whatever hoarding mentality we have. the moment that you can go, nah, getting rid of it, stepping out of it, jumping off of it, that's going to create your situational magnetism. So it's really beautiful this weekend after you listen to this podcast to really just think about some of the stuff you really fear, from small to big. The smaller the thing is, the least amount of magnetism you're going to create, still going to create magnetism. And clearly, the bigger the thing is, a fear that you're jumping off or walking through is going to create a lot of magnetism, especially when all you have to do is just surrender and have faith on the other side. Now, I do want to caution people who are listening to this and going, oh, I've got to leave that job I hate, or I've got to leave this thing. Jobs are actually really, really a specific way to manifest, and I really recommend opulence for that, because it's super important before you do jump off of that cliff when it comes to a job that you're fully expanded in what you're wanting to do or step into, or the career path you're wanting to move into. Plus, it's super important to have a fuck you fund. I make all of my clients do that, meaning that they have a savings account that has at least 3 to 6 months of savings of their exact monthly amount that they need to live on, so that they can actually be in their trust muscle, in their faith, to do that dance with the universe that, you know, the Formula Magnetism Workshop teaches you how to actually manifest. You need that thing to live on. Because if you aren't expanded and you don't have that fund and you jump off this cliff, you aren't going to manifest that next step, and you'll just become jaded. It'll make you fearful to ever do this again. So it's like, do it right the first time. So that's one caution I want to leave to the wayside. But pretty much all others, you're going to have a lot of you're going to have magnetism if you do that too, but if you're not fully expanded, you will not attract in that job situation you're wanting. So fear, look throughout your fears, take some inventory of your fears this weekend and look to see where you can jump off that cliff. The other note I want to make is that if you're like, oh man, where do I start to pinpoint my fears? The perfect workshop to look into is called Free. It's a roadmap. And we created these roadmaps, you know, in order for you, it kind of feels like you're with a coach, you know, it gives you week by week what to do for literally 3 months of how to become one of the four pillars of pure magnetism and free. It's exactly as it feels. It's those good old lyrics. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Literally having, not settling for anything that doesn't serve you, and having the confidence and the trust to be able to do so. So that's a perfect workshop to look into. And then also, if you're just wanting to take some inventory every day when those fears come up for you, I don't care if it's like a fear to get on stage and talk. If you go and do that, you're going to be very magnetic. And not only that, but you're going to create some actual speaking skills and not be afraid of it in the future. So it's really like, fear is the only way to accomplish it is through it. But the daily reprogramming exercise is really great for you to pinpoint where you picked up this fear, that layer of the onion that's actually preventing you and making you afraid to be that portion of your true whole authenticity. So the daily reprogramming is the way I would roll with that. I want to make an announcement about the daily reprogramming quickly too. We've kind of put out a little Instagram survey to be like, hey, would you guys want to do 30 days, a challenge of the daily reprogramming, so that we can all look at every single trigger that's coming up and really reinforce the neuroplasticity around it to shift it to become more whole and authentic, especially through the holidays. And it was a resounding yes. So we are going to be kicking that off on November 1st. It's totally free to be a part of that challenge. You'll want to head to the blog page and click on the Secret Society Facebook group. You'll want to join that, because that's where we're going to administer some deeper steps, how to take the daily reprogramming exercise a lot deeper all through the month of November, which will be super cool. And at the end, we're all going to basically recognize, like, hey, what shifts have we noticed? And you'll watch, it'll be pretty profound. So make sure to check that out. And yeah, start walking through those fears if you want to connect with your manifestation.
Today's guest, Mark Groves, he's considered a human connection specialist. What that means is he basically gives you no BS relationship advice. And this is somebody who's been through it and got really curious. How do we actually make our relationships better? Or let's take that question further. How do we have the relationships we want, or manifest the ones we want, or, you know, work on the ones we're in? And so somebody on my team, Amanda, introduced introduced me to his work. And right away, I was like, oh, we have to get this guy on because he and I see the world pretty similarly. I mean, there's not a quote that scrolls over his Instagram page that I'm not like, uh-huh, yep, exactly. That's the thing. So I'm really floored by his work. He has incredible workshops out. He's about to do a whole speaking tour next year in America. And I think that anybody here who is either in a relationship or is manifesting one will benefit from this podcast episode and will expand from it. And I think that covers just about everyone. Before we get into your process, I want to hear, what was your cultural background and upbringing? You know, was it a small town you were born in? What was your family life like? Let's get right in.
Let's get right into my origin story.
Yes.
So I grew up in Calgary, which is when I was growing up was about 600,000-700,000 people, and it's on the east side of the Rockies. I had to think about that. I'm like, oh, geography people are listening. east side of the Rockies, so it would be sort of like just north of Montana.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and it would be described, I think, more historically and still quite a bit, sort of like very mainstream oil and gas. So like the Houston of Canada, and Alberta would kind of be like the Texas of Canada. A lot of cattle, a lot of, you know, oil and gas mindset. And my dad is originally from Alberta, from a small town. Mm. And my grandma and grandpa on his side, my grandma's born in the United States in Michigan. My grandpa's born in Canada. My mom is an immigrant from Ireland.
Wow.
Yeah, she moved to Canada in 1972, I believe, something like that. And she was traveling and met my dad, was supposed to pass through, and he hooked her. So,
oh, man, great.
So, yeah, that's sort of like where I come from.
And with their relationship, what was that modeling like that you grew up with?
You know, I was pretty lucky in a lot of ways. You know, I talk a lot about the messages we receive that are both explicit and implicit. You know, explicit being like someone might say, never get divorced, and implicit being something like, oh, can you believe it? Aunt Teresa got divorced. I can't believe her. She gave up. You know, and which is sending the exact same message, just not directly. And I had a lot of really beautiful implicit and explicit messages. My mom was my dad's second marriage. Mm-hmm. And my dad had a daughter, my sister, with his first wife. And so I was sent messages like, it's okay to get divorced if something's not working. And some people might disagree that that's an okay message, but that's okay. And I was also saying, you can find love after a relationship ends, because my parents were testament of that. My sister I grew up with as a regular sister. I never thought of her as a half-sister. And I have an older brother as well, and who is from the same mom. And I think what was really powerful was, like, my mom, because she was an immigrant, when she moved to Canada, she had talked about having a hard time integrating and creating community. So our home was the place where I can remember as a kid, we'd have people every couple Sundays, different families from all over the world. And my mom speaks, I believe, 6 or 7 languages. So,
wow.
Yeah, we were really like, you know, my mom taught at the University of Calgary. Like, we were really blessed. My dad is incredibly emotionally intelligent. And so he was probably the one that I went more to for talking about girls or breakups or feelings. And I would sit down with him so much, and he would just like explore what I was going through and guide me. And he's a man of very high integrity.
Wow.
And I was really
so lucky.
And I recognized the blessing in that of, like, you know, they say you can believe that you're either born to your parents or you choose them. No matter what the answer is, I either chose well or I got really blessed and lucky.
Absolutely. Amazing. Oh, I love that. And your mom, on the other hand, what were her strengths? Obviously, she was very educated and, you know, adventurous. What did you sort of see modeled from her in terms of the females that you would be attracted to, or the partners you would be attracted to for someone who is non-cis?
Yeah, you know, great question. You know, I obviously my dad worked and my mom raised us. And then she went back to university while we were growing up. I believe we were I think I was probably 6 or 7. I can't remember exactly. And so she's very independent, very strong. She did feminist marches, still does. You know, she's very much about helping immigrants and refugees. And I mean, she's so kind and so open-minded. And, you know, she has very much taught me a lot about how to respect women and how to respect people. And she taught me to be very open-minded. And I can remember being on a bus as a kid with my brother going to school with her. And she would have us get up for elderly, for women, for anyone carrying a lot of stuff. And so, Wow. Yeah, you know, it was interesting because I remember as an adult when I was working, I was flying to Frankfurt and I was on a train at the airport and going between terminals, and a bunch of people walked in and I got up and gave them my seat because they were carrying big bags. And I got on my plane and the person who took my seat was my flight attendant. And so I got like food and wine, and it was great. I was like, see, Mom, you paid off. I got drunk on a plane today because you taught me.
I love that. And for you, what was your career before your current career right now? What did you explore that led to what you're doing today?
When I was in college, I worked at a place called Future Shop, which was like the Best Buy of Canada. Best Buy ended up buying them, and I was in sales. So I paid my way through college through commission sales and selling extended warranties and stuff like that. It's so funny to look back now. And then when I was in college, I did an undergrad degree in finance because I wanted to do the hardest one, which, God, anyone who does finance, I felt like it's probably like taking an Ambien. I've never taken an Ambien, but I fall asleep pretty fast from doing that. And I graduated from college and I knew that I wanted to work in some area of sales. So my dad was doing heart research. He studied heart failure. And so he also ran the cardiology education part at the University of Calgary and at the hospitals there. And so he was connected to a lot of pharmaceutical reps. So I actually worked as a pharmaceutical rep. I went and worked with a guy for a day and I was like, wow, you get paid to do this? This is weird. And so I started doing that. And I had a really specialized interest in how do I get people to change behavior and how do I essentially manipulate people. And I was reading books like How to Get Anyone to Do Anything, How to Win Friends and Influence People, you know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yep.
And I was starting to be really intrigued by how do you get someone to change not only products but behaviors. And it was coming more from like a how do I make more money and how do I be successful at my job. And I was incredibly successful in sales. And I had a relationship end when I was 27. And it was a girl that I'd been going to college with. You know, it's sort of like living the story we were all taught, you know. And again, an implicit message almost all of us are taught through Disney, but through our churches, through our cultures, through our societies. Get married by the age of 25, have kids around there, 27 mm-hmm. if you're a little delayed, 30 if you're a little more modern, I suppose, and have kids by 30, and if you don't, there's something sort of wrong with you. And mm-hmm. I was 27, so I was right on time, a little delayed, I suppose. And I remember thinking when I was like in junior high, because I went to a Catholic school, like, oh, I'm going to get married by 25 and get a house and make $100,000 a year. I don't know why that was the number. And get mm-hmm. a Porsche. And, like, it was so...
Now with inflation, it would be like much yeah. more. But I always had that number as well.
Isn't that very so interesting? Timeline. It's like...
It just shows societal programming, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, whenever I do a talk and I ask, like, how many were taught that story? It's almost everybody. Yeah. Unless your parents went against that story. And so when I got engaged, I had been sort of uncertain about it for a while, and we were moving in together and buying a house together, and I didn't know why I felt uncertain. I just, you know, people would say to me, or you're just afraid of commitment, you're a guy, you know, and I was thinking, like, I think I'm supposed to be, like, pumped to do this, you know?
Yeah.
And but I did start to think, like, well, maybe I am just afraid of commitment. Maybe that mm-hmm. is what it is, and my partner at the time is and was an amazing woman. So it made this decision really weird because I was like in conflict with this makes sense. Why doesn't it feel good? Mm-hmm. And the day I got engaged, I was just like, I don't know another word for it, but it was sort of like the day I woke up. And I remember asking and celebrating and looking sort of in a third person, sort of like looking at both of us and thinking like, I think I should be more excited than this.
Wow.
And that was the thought that basically like shook my system. Mm-hmm. And I went on the internet. At the time there wasn't Google. I was using, I remember web crawler, which sounds...
Wow. This was like pre-AOL.
Yeah. This is like, which sounds like a creepy sort of name of a website. And, this is 12 years ago.
Wow.
And so I went on there and I looked up, how do you know if she's the one? And of course if it was Google, it'd be like, how do you know if he's the one? Because did you mean, how do you know if he's the one?
Yeah.
Because I found this website, that was called The Runaway Bride. It doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately, but I posted on the forum my story. And it was people who'd been through things like that, left marriages, left engagements, been left, which is a great perspective too.
Yeah.
And I posted my story, and I don't know how to refer to them any other way than they sort of felt like angels, because it was the first time I was getting advice from people who didn't have a consequence of my choice.
Yeah.
Like, it was the first time that I had someone who goes like, no matter what you choose, I don't give a shit. I don't even know you. I just want you to be happy.
Love that.
Yeah, and that was, you know, I tell people, like, don't seek advice from people who are going to be directly impacted by your choices, because they'll give you advice based on how they might be impacted. It takes a lot mm-hmm. for a human to separate themselves from consciously from an impact, even though, because selfishly we want to protect ourselves, families, you know, all that stuff. Images, ego, all those things. And yeah. And this one woman asked me three questions, and they were like transformative. The first one was, if she left you tomorrow, would you be okay? And I was like, yeah, I would be okay. And then she was like, can you imagine what it would be like waiting for her at your altar, whatever your altar is? And I was like, oh, no, I can't. It was like making me anxious. And the third mm-hmm. question was, can someone else love her better?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and that one like rocked me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the first time that I thought about the impact on her. I'd been so selfishly mm-hmm. in my own pain, my own confusion, my own. But it was like, whoa, yes, someone can. And like, she is so worthy of that. And so am I. And, you know, of course, the follow-up question to that is, do you want to? Because, you know, I think it's a great check-in question for any relationship. To be like, can someone else love them better? Because if the answer is yes, someone will.
Mm-hmm.
Someone will step in and do it if you're not conscious and you're not taking your partner for granted. And, you know, we've sort of like made this idea that commitment and marriage means you have them.
Yeah, it's a done deal.
Yeah, like you've walked them down. Yeah,
exactly.
Which like, you know, my partner and I talk about this, that like we never want our relationship to be a prison.
Same.
Right. You know, it's like just because we're together and we choose each other doesn't mean we're devout of responsibility to love one another.
Exactly.
And I didn't know this then.
Anymore.
You know, I didn't, you know, I'd like to say, well, I was 27. There's a lot of 27-year-olds who probably know this, but I didn't. And mm-hmm. as much emotional intelligence as I thought I had, because I was incredibly good at sales and communication, I went back and I ended the relationship. And I started to study relationships then because I was like, how did I get here? And how do I never get here again? To this place where I was so lost, I realized that I was pissed because I was like, I've been taught so many lies. Like, mm-hmm. you get married to someone you fall in love with in your 20s, maybe earlier, and you stay with them forever, and you love them forever, and you die very much in love, like a couple old raisins holding hands. And I looked around after I sort of paid attention to the truth, and I was like, this isn't what's happening. This mm-hmm. is so rare. And I was like, it's so rare, and we have not been paying attention to this. And so
it is so wild how much the unconscious takes over when we're in relationship. I mean, I think 90% of the people actively in one right now are actively looking for one, unconsciously is running that exact loop you just outlined for us without even knowing it in their heart and their essence, but without actually really fathoming and knowing it.
Yeah, and I think for people to recognize that you, like for people to understand and recognize that you don't realize that you're choosing your partners and your relationships based on unconscious drives. And so when you're making choices that don't seemingly, that aren't seemingly great or positive or okay, and we're like, no, but I'm choosing. And I'm like, no, you're not. Your beliefs mm-hmm. are choosing for you. Your conditioning is choosing for you.
1,000%. Yes, yes, I agree. You know, I love that.
When I worked with this client, well, this happens with friends all the time too, or anyone, when I'm like, they're like, I just keep dating assholes. How do I, you know, like, what is it? Why don't I stop? And, you know, and I'm like, well, stop choosing them. Like, I don't like Brussels sprouts. I don't eat
1,000%. You know, and like, my big thing with that too is do the work to look at why you continue, like where you picked up that limiting belief, that limiting worth, which I know is your languaging a lot as well. Yes, you can have what you want, but you have to choose what you want that aligns with your own check-in of what you actually want.
That's exactly it. Because when I say to someone, do you want a great relationship? Who's doing that? They go, yes. They say yes all the time. And I say, no, you don't. There's a part of you that doesn't believe you're worthy of it, because if you believed you're worthy of it, you wouldn't tolerate bullshit. You wouldn't tolerate anything that doesn't mirror the belief that you believe you are worthy. So your belief will be always as powerful as your weakest choice.
Agreed. I absolutely agree. And so this looks like it's what led you onto the path of really, really... Well, I have to ask the question I ask everybody too, which I'm sure a lot of people are wondering at this point, because I always know everyone's. What is your sun sign, your astrology sign?
Scorpio.
Yay! Okay, cool. And your girl isn't into human design by any chance, where she may have looked up what yours is.
Human design.
Ah, what are you?
I am a manifestor. What is there? Is that the right? Am I using the right design? Yep.
Yes, yes. So you're a manifestor, a single manifestor.
Maker or something like that? Is that a word?
No, you got it. Manifestor. Okay, that helps a lot of us. We're all just profiling.
Yeah, I'm like, I can't even remember the right word.
Producer, I liked it. No, manifestor was right. Okay, sorry to interrupt. Continue.
Yeah, I remember Kai was like, you're one of these. And I'm like, is that good?
it is. They're all good. It's great.
So with that, what happened was, I started to study the signs of relationships because I was quite into research already because that's what I used to sell. So I really wanted to in a linear way, understand what is the science behind what makes great relationships great and what makes them fail or end. Because I don't really believe in the idea of so much relational failure. But we have conditioned people through societal messaging that if your relationship ends, you're a failure. And we've especially done that for women, you know, that their self-worth is found, and men's self-worth is found in, if you're in a relationship, then it's evidence that you're worth being chosen.
Yep.
And so we derive our self-worth from being chosen, not recognizing that when you're dating or in a relationship, you're choosing. Like you get to choose too. You're not just waiting for someone to choose you, but most people date and operate in their partner selection phase, which is like waiting finally for someone to choose them. And I'm like, get active, like get responsible for what you believe.
1,000%. Ooh, I love it. Oh, there's so many places to go. on that note, just to outline for, and I know you gave us, you know, a bit of an outline of what that has looked like for you. What has been your biggest rock bottom? The moment you've been on the floor crying, the lowest of low, just to outline what that's looked like for you.
Well, I think the greatest rock bottom, which I think is, you know, I sort of like think of a rock bottom as any invitation to rejoin yourself or to like come back to you. And I think heartbreak is probably the greatest, most frequent one, but it can be found through anything. I think
like financial disaster, career disaster, but it's basically what earthquakes you back into.
My girlfriend calls it a cosmic 2x4 to the head. And
yes, there you go.
Yeah, and I've had a number of cosmic 2x4s in my head, to my head. the first one was for sure the engagement. And I know that sounds like a weird rock bottom, but you know, that woman has been one of my greatest teachers for sure in that experience. And I'm so grateful for it. And I would say, you know, every time that I've felt, because the more aware I've become of my choices and my responsibility for my life, the more any choice that is out of integrity or values feels like a rock bottom. And I feel like my sensitivity to that is so heightened that anything that I didn't recognize was out of my integrity or out of alignment for me, it feels like an intense, you know, you can't take the glasses off. So you put them on and...
You can't take the lenses off. Yeah. I mean, off.
So...
For you, how do you navigate that personally for yourself? Like, let's say when you feel that something's happening out of integrity or you're just, you know, autopiloting along on something that's not right for you, what are some of your tools that you use or just check-in points? Like, how do you... Because a lot of people listening are in that space mm-hmm. and not knowing what to do. What would you say are some of your big check-ins for that?
Well, I think the first part is to let people know I'm not like some finished product who I'm in the same place too. I just have different strategies now. Like yeah. I have to step out of alignment to know what my alignment is. And first off is I acknowledge that shame will come up when I recognize that. Like when I recognize that I did something and I learned something new, I automatically will feel shame or guilt for the new knowledge.
Absolutely.
And so
that's what leaves us back to humanity,
yeah.
you know, is that shame and guilt that we're not God, that we haven't perfected ourselves, as that we're in the human experience. So I love that you said that.
When I think for people, that's usually where we stop because the shame of knowing we fucked up or we did something wrong or we're not, it has us not want to acknowledge it because then it feels like our self-worth is in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And so the first part is, and I also surround myself with people who call me out if I'm out and who also remind me of my humanity,
love
you know, and
that.
That's like my friends are constant, my partner, constant reminders of like that I'm lovable and, you know, I still have work to do, but I'm loved unconditionally. And sometimes we need the reminder of our imperfection and our humanity. And so I think that would be is like, in that shame and in that emotion of what could feel like unworthiness is actually where all the wisdom is. And so if you can face your pain, then you can actually listen to what is being invited of sort of like up-leveling or expansion or self-mastery is, mm-hmm. you know, this is why relationships are sort of like, if you want to rapidly grow and expand, look at how you show up in a relationship. Look at the results you get. Because that will be the fastest, fast track to anything. And all of our sort of greatest pains occur in relationship. And that's where they get healed. And so you can have your shit totally together when you're single. But then when all of a sudden you get in a relationship, you're like, I got it figured out. I went to that personal growth thing. I've got my anger figured out. I got this. And then all of a sudden you end up face to face with rejection. And it's like, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think relationship personally, but you could say relationship to anything. So it could be to food, to money,
absolutely.
To your career, to your purpose, to your partner,
absolutely.
To your body, all of them.
They're the beautiful mirrors
yeah.
that really mirror back exactly what you're talking about.
So I'm quickly interrupting this incredible conversation, which I'm sure is bringing massive expansion your way, to share that this is a little secret offering just for you guys who are loyally tuning into this podcast. You won't find this on the blog or social media or anywhere else, but we're offering you 10% off with the code EXPANDED. That's capital EXPANDED to sign up for any course on our site and receive 10% off. And so that goes for the formula in magnetism. If you're sitting there wondering how exactly do I manifest, it's your step-by-step process. It also goes towards any of the Unblock series, all of which I always like to say help to pump up your magnetism, with Reparent and Shadow being the most important that every manifester should treat themselves to. And also the roadmaps, which are for the people who are just joining in and don't have the luxury of
being able to have a session, or for the people who want to take the programs they already have far deeper in a way more navigated terrain. So enjoy that code, expanded, all caps, and we're so excited to have you as a part of this community. Make sure to also tune in to Supported for extra support weekly when you have questions. Unfortunately, because that's a subscription program, we can't offer a code off on that, but it's there for you and it's cheaper than a pack of gum every month. And I made it that way for myself when I was absolutely broke and had zero support in my life so that it could be accessible for anyone. Last but not least, I hope you're enjoying the episode, and please share any manifestations that are coming from doing these workshops simply using the hashtag FN Manifestations.
Probably the most important aspect of all of that is actually not shutting off the guilt and shame. And it's so natural for us to go to numbing techniques like alcohol, drugs, sex, any form of addiction, which can be anything, our phones, you know, anything like that. Yeah, anything that pulls us away from the negative emotion, which you could argue that is what causes all forms of addiction and those types of things, is obviously negative emotion and relational pain, but shame. And so if you can keep the shame out of secrecy and actually face it, then you can learn the lessons and the wisdom that are inherent in the thing you screwed up, the thing that feels not okay, the thing, whatever is there is an opportunity for a different behavior. But we often turn away from that because we feel embarrassed and ashamed that we didn't know that. But the only reason you know that is because you learned it. Like, I thought that was the craziest sort of part of my experience, is I would look at other people who had been the way I was, and I would like reject parts of them because I still rejected that part of me. So it was like, for example, I guess sort of like a more vulnerable, but I like would meet men who I found were either like playing women or like being manipulative. And I would be like, I can't believe that guy, blah, 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 blah. But it was because I was still rejecting that part of my past.
Absolutely. The shadow.
Yeah. So if you can face the shame, then you are literally facing the opportunity to become a freaking Jedi of that thing.
It's so true.
Well, then you'll be able to love deeper and live more expansively than you ever have. Because I think what happens is that we hit these upper limits. And these are usually limits that we're even subconsciously aware of. And so we create ways that we live within the story right before we know where that thing ends. So what I mean by that, because that could probably sound really confusing, is when I ask people to finish the sentence, when I love people, they, and when I let people love me, they. You'll usually find that the answer to that question is usually leave me, lie to me, use me, not recognize, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. You'll usually find that our partner picking techniques is usually to reaffirm that story or to completely avoid that story. And so we hit these upper limits where we're invited to a moment of mastery, which would literally change that story, but we keep recreating and being afraid of that story.
Ugh. So much good stuff in that for people. On that note, since we're starting to really get into relationships, this is your, you know, your specialty. What do you feel? So for the common manifester that I'm working with, you know, who we're in complete alignment, you know, you and I in this field. And when I'm teaching people to manifest their partners, it's all about self-worth. That's what I believe is magnetism. That's what I learned along the way. It's not think positive. It's subconscious self-worth.
Yeah,
and, you know, to address that, it's everything you're talking about, is really owning your shadow bits that you've rejected, really dismantling shame, dismantling anything that makes you feel less than. So for the person, because I mean, I don't work with people one-on-one anymore, and that was probably my highest ratio. Like, my specialty was manifesting partners, but you have such a beautiful arc. Not only are you working with people to choose consciously their correct partner, but you also, that's where I stop, you know, and I help people continue to better themselves. But where you take it so much deeper is how to maintain a relationship, how to keep showing up, how to go deeper. What are the first words you would say are the most important from your process for the common person tuning in who is looking to find partnership or already in partnership?
Often when someone is in a relationship that they're not fully satisfied with, they'll be like, well, it's just not the partner for me. And sometimes that can absolutely be true. You know, we pick someone when we're like 19 or 20, and I would beg to say that our partner picking skills are not usually refined by that age. Like, our brain isn't even fully developed for a long time after that. And so I think the first part would be like recognizing what is your own relational self-awareness and get to know you and your own limitations. Like, relationship, if you want to create a beautiful, amazing relationship, you have to take responsibility for your own stuff. Because really, a relationship is like your stuff and their stuff and how it interacts together. And we often think like we're attracted to people who are like our opposite sex parent. But that's not really true. We're usually attracted to people who wound us in the same way as a parent who wounded us the most.
Trauma bonding.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like we're really inviting ourselves to heal by our partner choices, which is really sort of ironic. It's like, I never really want to experience this again. I'm going to go find someone who
recreates. Totally, to open everything like back up.
Right. Or we pick someone who's the complete opposite, which of course, there's not balance found in the opposite, it's found in the middle. So I would say getting to know your own shit is the greatest thing ever, and knowing and just appreciating and getting into it. Because again, like, yeah, because a lot of people, when they start to learn about their past or their families or where they come from or their cultures and how it affects them, they automatically want to go, it doesn't affect me. Mm-hmm. Even people who come from really great families have a hard time recognizing where there were some limitations within the family, because then it means that maybe their parents weren't perfect. Totally. Or that their childhood that they seemingly remember as being amazing actually had some things. You know, it's like, well, our family never fought. I'm like, that's not actually great, because all healthy relationships should actually have conflict.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think there's a message sent out there that you just find the right person and then it's easy. Mm-hmm. And that, although finding a person who's really committed to growth, really committed to being open and having curiosity and having great conversations, although that's obviously a huge key to it, you're still going to have conflict because these two humans have never related before.
Totally.
And like, let's be honest, when you get to know your partner, you eventually, you know, take them off of the pedestal and they become human and they're gassy sometimes and they're, you know, they're regular people.
Yeah. All the things, jealousy, all the things that come up, all the like limiting beliefs, self-worth, all the tension. And that's what I love about any, like you were saying, in relation to anything in your life, is that tension is our only opportunity to really, really have to mirror our shit and look at it and really do something about it. Or we just continue to perpetuate the same thing over and over and over again.
Totally. Because if your partner frustrates you, amazing. Because there's something you need to know and learn. It could be a boundary. It could be no. It could be walking away. Like sometimes leaving a relationship is the right answer because you've tried everything you can. And actually your growth is that you just should never abandon yourself for a relationship.
I love that. Oh, I love that quote. You should never abandon yourself for a relationship. To me, nothing creates more magnetism on the planet than understanding your boundaries and how to implement your boundaries. And I think in our North American culture in general, everybody has a big problem with that. Basically, anything that had any foundational religious undertones or puritanical undertones beneath it, actually speaking our boundaries and considering our autonomy is very, very tricky for the common person. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and what your course is about as well, because I've actually wanted to start taking it potentially.
Yeah, the idea behind a boundary is, you know, there's a saying that good fences make for good neighbors. Mm-hmm. And that couldn't be more true about everything in life. If you have really great boundaries, you will just have a great life. That's very simple. You allow what you want and you don't allow what doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. Now, that should not be confused with feedback that invites your growth, because that doesn't often feel great to hear. But I talk about how like boundaries are basically, like, walls keep people out, boundaries teach people where the door is. Mm-hmm. And that's a real simple way of, like, boundaries can move, walls are often very fixed. Mm-hmm. And we have cultured and socialized women and men, but I would say more so women from an evolutionary perspective, to, like, give and give and give. and take care of everybody, but then who ends up not taken care of? Mm-hmm. You know, them, of course. Mm-hmm. And so boundaries allow this opportunity to fill your own cup. And immediately people will call that selfish often if you start to take care of yourself. But, you know, there's a great quote. I don't know who created it. I just saw it online and it said, the only person who will have problem with your boundaries are the people who benefited from you having none.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. One thing I love to touch on too, because I see this happen all the time, boundaries are a really, really strong part of my process as well. And how do you feel, or how do you help navigate within your course when the shadow rears from the person that a boundary is being put on, or the people or the limitation? Because there's always a shadow. I always see shadow rear in those beginning. And that's what makes people truthfully scared to have boundaries, is to deal with that conflict, that shadow that could potentially arise. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, usually what happens with interchanges with people where we've allowed too much is when we put in a boundary, we're changing the pattern of how we communicate. So we're actually like changing unwritten or unspoken agreements of how this relationship was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so naturally the other person is like, wait, I don't like what's happening here. I can't yell. I can't use words, you know, because they have, as you said, their own shadow is coming up. But it's like anything that involves, you know, when you're dealing with an addict's healing is not you trying to fix them and get them sober.
Absolutely.
An addict's healing is your own healing, which is saying no to things.
Yes.
So naturally, when we allow too much flow of what doesn't feel good, our natural reaction is to go from a porous boundary to a rigid boundary, which is like push everything away.
Mm-hmm.
And so we leave the relationship. We do, and sometimes, again, that's the answer. But often what we haven't learned yet is actually how to exist in love, exist in relationship, and hold on to who we are.
I love it.
Because one part you're like connected, but you're not protected.
Totally.
Dr. Alexandra Solomon uses this really great analogy. You're connected, but you're not protected when you have a porous boundary. When you have a rigid boundary, you're protected, but you're not connected to the other person.
Absolutely.
And you could sort of see this as like the message we've sent to women to like be independent, don't depend on anyone, don't allow... But sometimes you do need people, and it's healthy to depend on people. It's just not healthy to depend on someone else for your own self-worth and your own happiness.
1,000%.
Right. So it's how do you stay connected to another person and protected? And I think that's really what is sort of this revolution of relationship that's happening, is love wasn't part of marriage till the 19th and 20th century. You know, like we have totally new agreements entering a very archaic sort of structure. And it's not to say that marriage can't be a great institution. It's just whenever anyone says to me, like, I don't believe in marriage, I'm like, well, change the definition of the word. Like,
totally.
you weren't given it. You know, like, someone handed you what it should look like, and you just took it without saying, wait, I like this and I don't like that. Just like spiritual practices.
Absolutely.
It's like everything. Yeah. So it's sort of what we've inherited is in the patriarchal system is codependency.
Totally. Like,
both people didn't honor their own needs, including the men, didn't honor like what their purpose was, what their passions were. And a lot of that is survival based, you know, like it's not like when some parents moved from like Poland to America and started working, they could just pursue their dreams. They had to feed their family. So I think we're in a new place where we have this opportunity for abundance, this opportunity to create and follow and live anywhere. And it's really beautiful. But at the same time, we're using old relational tools we inherited to like be in relationship today, which I think is, it's interesting because we're learning how do you hold on to who you are and be in love with someone.
Totally.
When like our moms and dads didn't teach us that.
No.
So where the hell do we learn? Because it's not like our schools are going like, hey, you should take this course on money and you should learn about nutrition and you should learn about relationships. Oh, I was joking with my friend yesterday that like, I know the Pythagorean theorem, but no one taught me how to have a boundary.
Totally. Yeah.
Like right? The irony.
That's funny. Like how to, yeah, anything. Yeah.
Like totally. If you have three walls, I can find the length of the third wall. But if you asked me how to communicate a boundary when I was young, I was a doormat.
Yeah, totally. And so tell me about what the course entails for the person who is peaked and, you know, is really needing to learn boundaries. Because honestly, I've done a lot of boundary research out there. Most of the boundaries that I work in are energetic boundaries, mm-hmm. of working with like what you will accept and won't accept for your self-worth to create space and magnetize. But for inside your course, for the person who's just like, on the physical plane, on the energetic plane, how do I do A, B, C, and D? What would they expect doing it?
Yeah, so within the course, I mean, it's obviously on a digital sense, which makes it a little different. I do retreats where people can really get deep into the stuff and experience it in the physical sense. But with the course, it is about teaching people how to recognize where a feeling comes that you have a boundary that's being crossed, and then how do you communicate a boundary in an actually healthy, loving way? Like, people don't generally realize that when you teach someone how to treat you, not only are you feeding your own cup of self-worth and changing the beliefs you have about yourself, because a boundary says to the other person, I love and respect me, and I love and respect you enough to tell you how to do that.
Yeah, I love that.
Well, and the other side of it is symbiotic, is it says I love and respect me, and at the exact same time, it says to yourself that you're worthy of love and respect.
Absolutely.
It is probably the greatest contributor to self-worth out of anything, because the act of enacting a boundary is actually self-worth in
emotion.
Exactly. And I think the proof becomes in the pudding, right? I have evidence now that I love me. And I talk a lot to people about, like, recognize wherever you're angry with someone, but especially if you have any resentment. Resentment is exactly like always a mirror that you prioritize someone else's feelings, needs, and anything over your own.
And that they're running your show.
and then you get mad at them.
Yes, yes.
And really, they're just the evidence that you're not prioritizing yourself. Now, of course, people go, well, what about kids? And I'm like, well, there's always a line, right? Like, it always depends. But there is a line where people give away too much of themselves for their children. And children need to learn boundaries and know as well.
Absolutely. When I was a preschool teacher, it's actually what they enjoyed the most. Their shadow reared. No, it's not really their shadow. Yeah. It's their adventure and freedom reared, but it's truly what made them feel the most productive, safest, happiest, where they could play within these, you know, sort of energetic walls. And it really helped them be so free within that box. So that's, I feel the same for relationships, any dynamic in one's life. So it sounds like this would be beneficial for absolutely anybody. Especially even like navigating the terrain of like digital boundaries. That's like a whole new.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh,
like our
especially
social media.
Dating now. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, tell us don't about get that. Off an app.
What do you have to say to the person who is like really navigating, you know, the digital world of dating right now? Cause I have so many people, you know, doing these courses that are like, oh, I hate it. It sucks. It's yada, yada. Or I love it. And I met my what are your thoughts on this current climate?
Well, I think it's here to stay. So, you know, it's kind of like when someone talks about Tinder or Bumble and they go, well, it's just so superficial. And I'm like, look, humans have always been superficial. It's just that Tinder allows you to see a magnifying glass to the fact that we swipe left and right. But when you're walking down the street, you're swiping left and right all the time. Mm-hmm. So you're just not literally pushing someone in a bush and keeping someone, you know, it's not literally happening. But in your mind, you're putting people into categories of potential partner or not, or friend or acquaintance or enemy, right? So that's happening on a biological level in the subconscious, in your amygdala, far before you even know it's happening.
Totally.
Yeah. So first off,
I mean,
it's like,
it comes down to like mirror neuron. Like it's
totally,
it's completely evolutionary in our bodies. I mean, it's wild how we're geared to do that.
When I think like the beautiful part of the work you do and mine relationally is that we want to teach people, and which is part of our own work, of course, how to separate what is your biology from who you are.
Totally.
You know, like you're going to desire people walking down the street. But of course, you know, if you're in a relationship that's monogamous, that wouldn't be a healthy decision. Mm-hmm. You know, same is true of sugar. You have a biological desire to eat more sugar. It's not a great choice all the time.
Totally.
So with dating, I think it's interesting because like online apps are a tool. And I could give you a hammer and you could build a house or you could kill someone with it. Mm-hmm. And the exact same thing is true with Tinder or Bumble. You could find a partner that is the type of partner you want, or you could use it to, you know, if you say you want a great relationship and you're using it to bang people, you're not doing what you say you want. So you send a very confusing message to yourself and you send a very confusing message to the universe or God or whatever your thing is. And I think with online dating, it's really about like, what are you swiping right to?
also, it just goes so much back to what you were saying in the beginning. It really comes down to what you're choosing, whether you're conscious or unconscious of it. Like, you're choosing your experience in the dating world based, and my languaging is by subconscious projection. Like, you're completely.
Because that's what's happening.
Yes.
You're like, you are what you choose, not what you say you want to choose.
Exactly. 1,000%.
One, I think in dating, it's fascinating because people will write down everything they want. And then they're like, I've worked with people who are like using Tinder in front of me. And I'm like, would you swipe left or right to that? And they're like, I'd swipe right. And I'm like, what? Like, let's just go through the red flags that are apparent.
Thank you.
God. And, you know, like, you can look at the research. If I send someone into a college dorm room or on someone's Facebook, you can find with really high accuracy their value system.
Mm-hmm. Very. So, there's a great book on this that I can't remember. An art teacher teaches about this, that, just the subtle cues you pick up on right away. I mean, you can profile.
You absolutely can. There are decision heuristics. There's shortcuts that humans have. And some of our shortcuts are broken. Some of them are not conducive to great choices. And that's why if you find yourself swiping right to people who are like, I say to people, like, swipe with your brain, not your genitals.
Yeah.
Like, your genitals are not going to make great choices generally. Totally. Yeah. Right? Like, and don't swipe sober, or swipe sober. Don't swipe sober.
Sorry.
That'd be bad advice. Also, the dog's like, no, that's horrible advice.
It's great. No, I think she senses that the mailman's nearby. And for the person who is just coming to work with you, learn from you, figure out how to navigate dating and relationships, what would be their way of interacting? Let's say if they're from afar or if they're able to work with you in person, what does that all look like for them?
Well, I'm similar to you. I don't really do one-on-one coaching anymore for like the rare exception. And most of my stuff now is retreat-based, event-based. I just got my U.S. visa, so I'll be
sweet.
Yeah, so I'll be going down to the States and doing like a speaking tour and workshops and a lot of online stuff I like to do, like online workshops. If you go on my Instagram link, there's a ton of stuff of like different webinars that are recorded that are available for people to do on boundaries, dating 101. I have a relationships 101 course. It's about deep immersion to me. You know, it's like, you can learn and learn and learn and read books and do all those things, you know, or you can actually start to apply these things. And because true change really comes when you actually do something different.
Yeah.
And I find as humans, we get so addicted to the learning that we forget that it actually, we get lost in that because people will go, oh, I see that you're doing the work. I see, but you're not changing the results and the outcomes in your life.
Agreed. Completely. That's the only way to actually receive something different.
Totally. Surround yourself with other people who are doing the same thing, like the way that yours is structured. It's like people are surrounded by other people who are doing it, so they're accountable.
Totally. Absolutely.
Which we need. You can't hang out with old friends with old ways of thinking if you want to create a different life and a different you. And I'm not biased to that. I love your old friends are probably really great. But at the same time, they need to change. If you want, you got to hang out with people who are the way you want to be.
Absolutely. It's the only way you'll expand into it. I mean, it's 101. So that's beautiful. Yeah. Oh, great. And what else do you have coming up in the future for the person engaged right now?
So I'm speaking at Wellspring, which is a Wanderlust event.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, in Palm Springs. And then I'm doing, I think I'm doing their festival in Oahu in February. And then I think I'm just about to get down and figure out if I'm going to run one in March or April. I'm just not sure when.
Ah, cool. Okay. So there's some touch points people can come in and speak.
Yeah, like totally. Like I'm in the new year, I am going to do a speaking tour and like go to all the major cities because I've been waiting to get this U.S. visa for a while. So now I'm like, I didn't want to do anything like out of integrity. So I'm like, I'm going to get this visa and do it right. And I got it. So it was great.
I remember hearing in a podcast once, this is a total segue, because I love Tony Robbins' podcast. It's moved a lot out of the motivational space. It's much more into the entrepreneurial space.
Yeah,
but he talked about like the first time he had, I think it was in Canada, he had some huge speaking event and somehow the government tried to shut him down by saying he didn't have a permit. So he got so creative that he would bus people back and forth every day. And he had to find like a whole new hotel, a whole new thing. And it was really
Wow.
So that's, you just Tony Robbins. A lot of issues.
Yeah, I don't want to have to get buses and move people.
No.
But I love being in person with people because I think there's something about immersion. There's something about being in a space with other people where true transformation occurs. And I think it's beautiful for someone on the journey to finally see that there's other people who think about what they think and think about the things they think. Mm-hmm. Because I think when we first start, you know, when I first started asking questions about relationships, my friends weren't like, that's a great question. I really want to know why relationships end. They were like, dude, you're going through a breakup. Like, you're just in the depths. And I was like, no, but I have real questions here.
Yes. No, I love that. And it's just simple symbiosis that happens, like actually on a cellular level of being around, you know, people in a message. So okay. And then I really want to finish it off because I just think that you're such, and if you guys haven't tuned into his Instagram, you have to go check it out. Everything will be in the links because you send so much material out throughout the week that's so spot on.
Thank you.
But for the average person here in this community, they're working on their self-worth. That's literally, they're either working on that or they're working on expanding, again, being surrounded by what they want to be. What would be the most important words you have to share for the person? Because we're in relation, like you said, to everything all day long.
Yeah, that's how
our reality is created. What are the most important takeaways you would like them to know about self-worth and the process of evolving to having what you want?
Well, I think the first part is give yourself permission to be human and to recognize that self-worth is an ongoing, ever-moving target. So as you fill what is your worth, your self-love, it's rituals and habits. And I think the second part that was really important for me was like the game changer for me was when I made a rule of my life that I would always live at my highest level of knowledge.
I love that.
Well, I found that I was really, and I think a lot of people can relate to this idea, is we learn so much that we can intellectualize anything. Humans are great at making excuses. We're great at making things make sense. And I think it's about stopping trying to make things make sense so you can stay fucking still and be play small and be whatever your average is. Because when I finally made the rule to live at my highest level of knowledge, I stopped making mistakes that were choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to rise to a whole new level of integrity, which was, I've already fucking learned this.
Yes.
Why am I still doing this shit? Because when I was still doing the shit, I was hurting myself.
Yeah.
Because I already knew the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was maybe the greatest change for me, was like consciously calling my own ass out on not listening.
I love that. Oh, so good. It's so true. And what would you have to say for the person who, I believe that our pure magnetism is when we are tapped into our true authentic essence, when we're coming from that core, we want things from that place, when we're really, I call it the onion. We build up the ego shell as the onion, right?
Totally.
So we present with, so that we'll be safe in the world. And it's also like you talked about all the programming we receive to be loved if we did X, Y, and Z. But all of this work is to tap into your essence and your authenticity. What are your biggest takeaways of tapping into your authenticity, especially in relationship to finding a relationship or being in a relationship?
Well, I think the first part is to always live in love on your edge. Like anything that you're familiar with, anything that you already know the outcome of is not a new behavior and not a new choice.
Mm.
You know, so you're not expanding if you're just recreating the same day-to-day things. Not to say that foundational pieces aren't important.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, do something new that you've never done. Continue to always do that. Because you'll start to see that true self-worth and authenticity it's going to be scary, because what you're doing is you're changing very radically a huge evolutionary thing, which is, if you love me, I love me.
Mm-hmm.
If you accept me, then I'm a good little boy, I'm a good little girl, I'm a good Catholic, I'm a good Christian, I'm a good member of society. But the moment that you go, I'm going to be me, you adjust.
Yeah,
I'm going to be me,
everything.
You, and that becomes magnetizing, because it's the same thing as when someone walks in a room and you go, I don't know why everyone is just so drawn to them. It's because they don't give a fuck if you like them.
1,000%.
Exactly.
It's authenticity.
They like them.
Everything. Yes.
And that's it. Is like, if you like you, no longer will it be anyone's job for them to love you so that you feel good. And what it does in relationship is it radically shifts it, because your partner's job is not to fill your self-worth, to make you feel good, to make you happy. The moment you take responsibility for your own love and your own happiness, you allow them to just love you.
Absolutely. And I'll even finish that off because it's such an important point that everybody listening needs to understand. Going back to even the analogy of walking into a room and everyone's like, oh, well, who is this person? Mm-hmm. It's because that's what everyone desires most on the planet, is to be loved for exactly who they are. So when we see that, we can't take our eyes off of it. We're like, whoa, that must be so liberating. That's true freedom. That's true authenticity. That's true magnetism. And again, and, you know, it's the world having to adapt to us. If we all did that, that's called wholeness.
Right. And I think if you recognize that every time you don't share who you are because you're afraid someone won't like you, you are actually the birth of your own rejection.
Yes.
Agreed. And they just become the reason you rejected yourself. So you get to get mad at them, but really you're mad at yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for everything today. We have to have you back, like after people have explored your work and have lots of questions, because it's so perfectly in alignment. I believe in what you're doing so fully. I'm so grateful you're on the planet helping people with this, because it is literally a new paradigm of how to actually be in relationship and be happy.
Yeah, and be who you are and hold on to that.
Yes.
It's such a skill set, and anyone can learn it. Like, there is not a single person listening who can't create the relationship they love. Anyone can learn it.
That's one last thing I do actually want to bring up, because I have so many people that will be so blocked because they've never had a serious monogamous relationship in their life or ever. So there's all these limiting beliefs that they can't have it, that they will never have it, they're not worth it. And so obviously they have to do a little extra work and dig a little bit mm-hmm. deeper. What do you have to say to that person listening?
Well, the compassion piece for self is always important. We always have to start with compassion for ourselves. I know I come back to that a lot. The other side is you have to be able to call yourself on your own bullshit. Like, when I work with clients and they go, there's no good men out there. They're mm-hmm. everyone in, it's so hard to date in, insert the town, the city.
Yeah, New York, LA.
Yeah. Oh. And I'm right away like, you don't need a million people. You need one.
Yeah.
And the other part is whatever you believe, including about online dating, including will be true for you.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you believe that's limiting or getting in the way of that thing is put there so that you don't fail, so that you don't get rejected, so that it's very survival based.
Out there. Yeah, it's survival, safety.
Yeah, so recognizing that it's there to help you, but it's not helping you, and realizing that you need to cultivate beliefs that make things possible. And we really have this sort of misconception, but it's evolutionary, that we need these things in order to survive. I need to hold on to this belief in order to, like, I'll never, just because I've never been in a relationship, I'm never going to be able to create one. It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
It's all bullshit. And if you surround yourself with people who believe in that stuff, it's going to reinforce it. Of course, we surround ourselves with people who have the same values, have the same thoughts, have the same. But man, the moment you start shifting, the moment you go, I believe in miracles, like I might meet my person today and I can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
Then it happens.
Yeah. I love that. Oh, I love that. Oh, thank you for your amazing words. Also tell us a little bit about your partner. She looks amazing. I just saw her on your feed yesterday and she's up to some really good work as well.
Oh yeah. She's phenomenal. And you know, what's really beautiful is like, she was divorced when she was younger. And that is one of my favorite things about her mm-hmm. is like how much she learned from that. She's just all about doing deep work on emotions, understanding emotions. She's a lot into like female empowerment and, you know, talking with female entrepreneurs. She works in the wellness space. She has a digital health company with her twin called Zura Health.
And what's her handle again? So we can look her up.
Hers is Being is Beautiful.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I just started following her.
Oh, she's amazing. And her twin is Jess McBeth, and their company is Zura Health. And it's an awesome, it's a 16-week program that is a total holistic reboot health support program. It's awesome.
Amazing.
Well, teaching like emotional health and all that kind of stuff.
All the things, the spiritual, physical, mental plane.
Yeah, nutrition, money, everything.
Awesome. Well, keep on killing it in the world. We're so grateful. And I'm so excited for this tour that's going to happen. And thank you. Thank you for talking
today. Thank you so much for having me. It's honestly such an honor. I really appreciate it.
thank you so much for joining today. And if today's episode piqued your curiosity about manifestation, head over to freeandnative.com and click on Start Here, where you'll find a video of me giving you all of my recommendations of how to navigate manifestation from here on out. And again, if you liked it, please comment below, review, and share with a fellow manifester. And if you're looking for the like-minded community that you might be manifesting, head over to our Facebook group called The Secret Society. You can find that on our homepage, and make sure to sign up for our newsletter where we send out new manifestation content and how to digest it and put it into practice twice a month. Have a beautiful day.